A healthy life starts with great sleep. Wake refreshed with Avocado's GOTS-certified organic green mattress, delivering breathable, back-loving support, natural materials from Avocado's own sustainable wool and latex farms, easy financing, a one-year sleep trial, and deep, restorative slumbers. Organic sleep awaits at avocadomattress.com.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
Oh, what are you doing? I'll tell you what you're doing. You're listening to the Elder Scrolls Lorecast. Either you are, or I'll be skipping rope with your entrails. Ta-ta.
This is the Elder Scrolls Lorecast, your source for lore and so much more. Adventurers, welcome back to the Elder Scrolls Lorecast. This is Tom and Lotus, and we are going back to the beginning of everything. Welcome back to the show, and you might be wondering, okay, what's going on? Well, one of the things that we've been doing, although very slowly over time, is revisiting some of the original topics from the earliest episodes on the show, the first like 90 episodes. And during those episodes, a lot of the things we covered were things like the creation stories, the nature of the reality, the different races, but also the Daedra, and then some of the other beings and those kinds of things. Now, we've gone back and we've covered the Daedra again with a deeper dive, and that was a while back now. We've also gone over the Aedra, but we haven't gone back over the creation story, and there's not really one creation story. In fact, I think we can go back over these things and do them better than I originally did in those first 90 episodes, which are now only on Patreon. So the idea here is to cover the same topics even better. And if people want to go back and check out those original episodes by joining us on Patreon, getting ad-free episodes, those kinds of things, you can do that. But I think what we're about to do is going to be way better, way more informative, and you have me and Lotus talking about it. With,
yeah, I was just to say, the first 90 were pre-me. I think I was only on like one right after I won the first giveaway you ever hosted.
That's true.
Still entertains me to no end that it's like, well, now we've been podcasting together for several years. We originally met because I was listening. You listened to my show. I listened to your show when it started, and then I entered one of your first competitions and won and became a guest.
Right.
I seem to weasel my way onto shows as a guest and then just become part of the wallpaper.
Yeah, you're a friendly guy. It makes sense. But anyway, we have now years more experience than when I started the show like 6 years ago.
Yeah, it was a while ago.
Yeah. So we've got a lot more experience and a lot more perspective on this. So I think we can do a better job now explaining the nature of reality and the creation myths and all of that. And speaking about creation myths, one of the things that we have to understand is that, well, first of all, there's no 100% reliable narrator. We do not have an 100% objective version of anything. Everything Yes. comes from an unreliable narrator. Everything comes from a specific person who's part of a specific culture, a specific race, and at a different time in history. Some of these books were written earlier. Some of these books were written later. And just like in our own world, there's no 100% objective truth available.
Right.
Everything requires interpretation.
So one of the things that, I mean, we've mentioned it countless times on the show, everything is designed from an in-universe perspective that we get to see. And as a result of that, like you said, but there's the different perspectives and also different slants, sometimes not always with the genuine attempt at being honest.
In fact, and instead, even subconsciously sometimes, this is the way reality works, is even people right. who have an intention to try to be honest and accurate will subconsciously include things that they want to be true, or that they, you know, think is true because they heard it from another source, but that other source yep. wasn't reliable, and so therefore they're playing the game of telephone back through history.
And, you know, certain with cultures a lot at war in this series, sometimes it's less like an accident or just like there's definitely straight up propaganda from different sides based on books you read, which makes it even more interesting because just in certain situations, like, well, just because it's also propaganda doesn't necessarily mean it's not based on something real. It's there's so many different aspects that make up the lore of this series, which is so cool.
Right. And the longer we get into this, I think there's another component that we don't talk about too much. And it's that there are elements of the way that the greater powers express themselves in reality that appear not only different to the different cultures because they write about them in different ways, but they even manifest differently in different games when they seem like they're the same thing. One of those things would be something like Akatosh, the dragon god of time, but Akatosh is not really worshipped by the Nords. Alduin is part of that, but Alduin is different from Akatosh, but yet they're the same. But yet Akatosh is supposed to be a good Aedra to the Imperials, but yet Alduin shows up and is trying to end time and it seems bad for the Nords. How do you reconcile these things? And I think that there's probably an element of either reality is kind of subjective to the perceiver, or the greater powers manifest in different ways and are not always consistent. And there's some other thing going on there.
Much like the overarching theme, there's a lot of gray area in this series where things are very rarely quite so black and white as to like, these are the bad guys, these are the good guys. Like, sometimes it looks like that at surface value when you play your character in certain ways. But, you know, even regarding the Alduin situation you were just talking about, we haven't gotten past the Elder Scrolls 5 Skyrim. We haven't seen Elder Scrolls 6 yet. We don't know when the timeline it will fall. We don't know that maybe preventing things from getting destroyed and restarting perhaps in like a new Kalpa, which is just like a beginning and ending of time or a new, you know,
a new cycle
right. to things. Well, did we mess up by doing that? Like, was that actually what
is it supposed
to
happen
to do?
Right. Like, is this the way the world is supposed to work and it's supposed to come to an end? And now we
exactly.
messed it up.
But but on surface value, you're the hero who prevented the end of the world. Right. But there's indications that the world has reset several times, which brought us here.
Yeah.
So, if everybody just kept preventing that, we wouldn't be the hero preventing. Like, it gets really sketchy.
Right. So, yeah, everything's down to the perspective. So, speaking of all that, this is a lot to say, and we're using these words that if you're very new to the series and to our podcast and things like that, we're going to try to explain these things. Kelpa is a cycle of time. This idea that time begins and it goes through its cycles and then it ends, it's destroyed, and then another cycle begins over and over and over again, probably infinitely, but who knows? That's another one of those weird words, and we're going to be defining these as we go back through the creation stories and the nature of existence. And in order to do that, based on all the things that we just explained, we're not just going to say, this is the nature of reality. This is the creation story, because there is not a single answer to any of that. There are simply perspectives. So we're going to start with the perspective of the Altmer, the High Elves. And there's a reason we're starting with the High Elves' perspective. It's because it seems like the most commonly understood or base format for things with which other races tend to deviate from. So they have kind of a base format. It's the closest to the thing that most people will describe as the way things are actually, even though there might be problems with it. And then we're going to deviate from there. But again, it's subjective. It's subjective. And how do we know about these things? Well, we know because of all the lore books across the series. And the series has had tons of books written that you find in the world and they describe things. And of course, those are by different authors from different time periods and things like that. So instead of saying, this is the definitive, the way things are, we're going to go, what book is the closest to explaining the perspective from this group? Let's analyze that book and see what we learn from that. And then on future episodes, we're going to go, okay, but this other book over here says this. How is it different? How is it the same for the Imperials, for the Nords, for the Argonians? So we're just going to move through and kind of take this piece by piece, looking at the books first rather than looking at the books second, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, for sure. And I think this is a good way to try to explain it. And it gives us some options that people can take this information that we present from these books and kind of like assess, like, is there anything that doesn't quite match up? Like, that's another thing, is like, things aren't always foolproof in this series, which is something I find very interesting, because it lets us kind of debate these things on, well, okay, if this, then why that?
Right.
And again, because it's all written from a fallible narrator, it's like, well, they don't have all the answers, so.
Right. They make assumptions.
Makes things interesting.
And sometimes they get things wrong. And sometimes, and this is what's most interesting about going to the books first, the things that we think to be true will have weird contradictions or weird ambiguities in the actual books themselves that make you step back and go, okay, well, that's odd. I didn't assume that, based on what I think I know, I didn't assume that would be in the book. So that's why we're going to the books first. We're going to the sources first.
I will also say, from a cynical standpoint, it does give them a really good out if they need to actually kind of the Cyrodiil debate and, you know, stuff like that.
The writers have like a, well, we can change things, and it's, you know, part of just allowing us to be malleable.
We didn't mean jungle like per se, so it does give them that from a out of universe perspective as well.
Lotus is mentioning that Cyrodiil in some of the books is described as a jungle, but then when you go to it in the games, it's not a jungle. So like, why is it
in
different?
The game,
and there's some hand-wavy explanations for like, oh, well, Talos, Tiber Septim just like made it not a jungle at one point.
Right.
And it's like, or but it still wasn't a jungle before he was around. Or like, what?
Right. Or at the same time, there was also like, well, he described it as a jungle, but it's because the author didn't really have experience with jungles per se. So to them, this temperate forest was like a jungle.
Was like a jungle. They're just like, you know, New York City's a jungle. right. All right. So here, let's get into it. We're going to start with one of the books that's part of the Monomyth, which is actually a collection of books. You've probably heard, if you've been around, you've probably heard of the Monomyth. You've probably picked up books in the series in Skyrim or Oblivion or ESO or whatever. And this one is the Monomyth, the Altmeri, the Heart of the World. This is like the very bottom of the list of those books. And we're going to go through paragraph by paragraph, and then we're going to break this down. And we're going to talk about some of the things that are there and then some of the things that are missing. So here, let's get into it. The first paragraph starts off and it says, Anu encompassed and encompasses all things, so that he might know himself, he created Anu-iel, his soul and the soul of all things. Let's pause there. Anu. What is Anu?
Just diving right into it. I was going to say, boom. So Anu is, we've got this, I guess we kind of can't discuss Anu without Padme as well. The easiest way to kind of, I always relate it to, is like the yin yang type of paradox, where it's like you kind of have your light side and dark side, but they don't really exist without the other one.
Right. Order and chaos. It's a dichotomy.
Order and chaos.
Right. Order and chaos, light and dark, good and evil, even though that's very, very subjective.
Yes, but you can't explain one without its counter.
Right.
Like, there is no good if there is nothing to counter it. It's just exists, like, there's just a thing.
Right. So some people would even say existence, non-existence. Like,
you could even do that. Yes,
right.
Exactly.
There's two things.
Yes. So, Anu and Padme, this is our dichotomy of existence.
Right. Now notice Padme is not
form.
Padme is not mentioned here. There's no mention of Padme. It's just Anu, and Anu encompasses and is encompassed in the past, but it also encompasses all things. Anu is the sum total of all things, and he created for himself a piece of himself that has his soul and is the soul of all things. So there's this piece of them comes off. In the deeper lore, some groups would describe the Godhead as being the combination of Anu and Padme, and it's having a dream. There's all this language around that. We'll get into more of that later. That doesn't really come into play here. Everything just starts
less
with Anu.
Relevant to this discussion, at least.
Right. And then, so you have Anu. Anu breaks apart a piece of him that manifests as a soul, whatever that means. And he's also the soul of all things. And his name's Anu-iel. It goes on. Anu-iel, as all souls, was given to self-reflection, and for this he needed to differentiate between his forms, attributes, and intellects. So basically, wanted to perceive himself, and so therefore broke himself up into smaller parts. Thus was born Sithis. This is interesting, because a lot of people will say Sithis is Padmeic. Sithis is maybe analogous to Padme. Sithis is kind of like the soul of Padme, and Anuiel is the soul of Anu. Not according to this document. Thus was born Sithis from Anuiel, who was the sum of all the limitations Anuiel would use to ponder himself. So the concept here is that an all-being eternal, all-encompassing thing can't perceive itself. It needs to, it has no limitation. So it has to create something that is limited so that it can reflect back on itself.
Which I love, because just discussing the like dichotomy of like that, you know, what we were just talking about with all the different like, oh, light, dark, like, I like how even in this regard, it's sort of the same way, where you have an infinite being, but it needs a finite thing in order to comprehend it. So right. It's like, again, right. you're going right back to this, like one has its opposite. And it's just like in this description, it's infinite to finite, which is right. weird when discussing yeah. a being that's theoretically infinite.
Right. It's another one of those dichotomies. And I mentioned on a previous episode, I've been diving more into Gnostic philosophy. This mm-hmm. is Gnosticism was an early form of Christianity that just didn't make it later on. And it has many different variations. It was not an organized system. But in general, people who had Gnostic-like beliefs believed in a creator being, and this idea that the reality was broken and that there was like this evil God who made reality. And there's similarities here between these views and Gnostic views. I'm not going to go into a lot of detail on that. We could probably do a whole episode on it. But if that's something you're familiar with, that kind of helps you understand this, because Michael Kirkbride is the author of this book and the author of a lot of the lore in the game series, and is known to have brought in all of these different kinds of philosophies, including Gnosticism, and kind of yeah. used them in the creation of this.
One of the things I feel was strongest about Michael Kirkbride's writing, other than the fact that some of it's super weird, so it makes it unique, mm-hmm. is how many different cultures he kind of adapts to this fantasy world and bases it on.
Yeah, incorporates these, those themes and
yeah,
ideas.
I found that very fascinating, because it's from... It's really just so in depth, the amount of them that he incorporated into his stint of writing for the series.
Right. Berg mentions super esoteric beliefs, but very interesting. Yeah. So esotericism, if that's the right way to say that. Anyway,
I guess that would be how you pronounce that. That's a word I'm not sure I've ever actually said so much as read.
Yeah. So anyway, let's keep moving with the document. It says, thus was born Sithis, who was the sum of all limitations Anuiel would use to ponder himself. Anuiel was the soul of all things, therefore became many things. And this interplay was and is the Aribus. So that place where Sithis and Anuiel butt up against each other creates a thing, the Aribus. That's like the realm of existence is like in the center between those two things. You can kind of picture it as like a Venn diagram. The part where they overlap, that's the Aribus. At first, the Aribus was turbulent and confusing as Anuiel's ruminations went on without design. Aspects of the Aribus then asked for a schedule to follow or procedures whereby they might enjoy themselves a little longer outside of perfect knowledge. So they wanted to be more limited, basically. They wanted... time to flow in a direction. They wanted to be able to like use these aspects of limitation to then differentiate themselves even greater and give them more control over being these sub pieces of the bigger puzzle.
This is also really funny, because this is incredibly analogous to us discussing the topics before the show, and then us doing the show, we are currently trying to condense down this big mess. So right. we're living what we're talking about.
Yeah. So it goes on. It says, aspects of the Aribus then asked for a schedule. We just did that line. So that he might know himself this way, Anu created Ariel. So Anu, who made is the Anuiel, the soul of himself, and separated that, then now creates a new, or I'm sorry, where was the line?
Ariel,
right?
Yeah.
Which is sometimes spelled R-E-E-L. Ariel.
Yeah, there's a couple variants of it, but the physical person version.
Right. The soul of his soul. So he creates a thing that is the soul of everything, and then that thing creates a separate soul that, like, is still the thing that it came from, but is more nuanced and separate from that thing, because all the other pieces are separate from that thing as well.
Right.
But it's
and
the
it
thing that is
more
closest.
Comprehensible.
Right. It's more comprehensible, but it's also the thing that's closest to the original thing. So everything gets whittled down. And this is a theme among the Altmer, is that everything kind of descends from a hierarchy and gets more limited as it descends. And that's what we're seeing here. So he created Anuiel, the soul of his soul. Ariel, the soul of his soul. Ariel bled through the Arbus as a new force called time. With time, various aspects of the Arbus began to understand their natures and limitations. They took names like Magnus or Mara or Zen. One of these, Lorcan, was more of a limit than a nature, so he could never last long anywhere. There's a lot to unpack here, but the basic concept is many of these manifestations became these powerful beings. They're the gods. Magnus, who is the god of magic, who eventually leaves the world. Mara, Zen, Lorcan. Lorcan, Zen isn't talked about very much anymore, but is in this list. And this is not a complete list. They're just some of the individuals. And right. Lorcan is going to become very important because Lorcan is kind of the antithesis of Ariel. We're talking about these dichotomies, right? These dualities.
Constantly changing and...
Yeah, looking for limits, looking for constants, looking for absolute limits on the nature. Time doesn't go on forever. Space doesn't go on forever. There are limitations within this.
Yeah, things end.
Right. I think mortals have lives that begin and end, that sort of thing. So that's Lorcan, right? As he entered every aspect of Anuiel, Lorcan would plant an idea that was almost wholly based on limitation. He outlined a plan to create a soul for the Arbus, a place where the aspects of aspects might even be allowed to self-reflect, where things can actually see themselves. He gained many followers. Even Ariel, when told he would become the king of the new world, agreed to help Lorcan. So they created the Mundus, where their own aspects might live and become the Et Ada. So this is the first mention of the Mundus. The Mundus is the mortal plane. It's the place where... the world exists, where the continent of Tamriel is.
Yeah,
Where we play in game. That's the Mundus. And outside of the Mundus is thought to be the realms of Oblivion. We've got these concentric circles. Mundus is in the middle. Think of it like a planet in the middle. And then around that is Oblivion, this emptiness, but it's actually lots of infinite realms based on the Daedric princes. And then beyond that is Aetherius, which is this realm that is... the place of the things that were there before everything else when they were creating things in the beginning.
Right, and they kind of don't, they're almost outside limitations in some degrees.
Right, it's like...
which is weird.
The realm beyond, it's the place that Magnus retreated to that creates the holes in the firmament, and then magic comes through, all of that weirdness, which is all... again, speculative. It's all depends on your perspective on all this.
Right. And actually, it's mentioned in chat, the void, like all of these, you know, you've got planets where they're actually like they're infinite planes, but we warp them into looking like orbs because we can't comprehend infinite, all this extra stuff.
Right. Yeah. The stars are holes in the background that go to Aetherius. The moon is a hole. The sun is a hole. The moons are not holes. Let me get that straight.
The moons
are actual objects like the planets are, but they're also seem to be their own realms. The sun is a hole and the moons are holes. But that's just one interpretation. It's a lot, right? But the most important part about this is that we're finally getting where it's less about the nature of the way reality fits with everything else, because they're not telling us all of that other information, which is something that they tend to believe. What they're focusing down on is the interplay between these personalities. This Lorcan, as it says here in the next paragraph, this was a trick. Lorcan's a trickster. As Lorcan knew, this world contained more limitations than not and was therefore hardly a thing of Anu at all. It is the most non-Anu-like thing that exists because it is full of limitations. Mortals.
Almost a limitation in its existence.
Right. And it's confined to a cycle of time. And once that time cycle ends, then it would have to start over. So there's this kind of meta layers to its own limitations. Mundus was the house of Sithis. As the aspects began to die off, many of the Et Ada vanished completely. The Et Ada are these powerful beings, whether it's Ariel, or Lorcan, or as I mentioned before, Magnus, or Mara, or, and you can get to Julianos and like all of the Aedra and all of the Daedra. They are all Et Ada. Basically, they are these powerful beings. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, that, I was going to say, I feel like that's the best way you could explain that.
Yeah. So when you hear Et Ada, just think godlike beings, regardless of what they did or didn't do. Many of the Et Ada vanished completely. So there were more than we will ever know of. There, many of them just, the limitation of the world made them go away. Some escaped, or the other option is that they put themselves into the creation of the world and used up their energy and then therefore disappeared or became part of the existence of the world, like the earth.
Yeah, it kind of just became the flow of things because they gave so much of themselves, there wasn't really a lot remaining.
Right, right. So many of them vanished. Some escaped, like Magnus, and this is why there are no limitations to magic. So the theory here is that Magnus left the hole in the sky, which became the sun. That's where Magicka leaks through, and that's why mortals are able to cast magic spells. That's why Tamriel's a magical place. But Magnus noped out. He's like, I'm not committing to this. Yeah. He was, in some of the other stories, he was one of the main architects along with Lorcan, but then he was like, nope, not going to do this anymore.
Yeah, that's enough. I'm gone.
Yeah, I see what you're doing here. I'm out. Others like Ifrei transformed themselves into the Elnofei, the earth bones, so that the whole world might not die. So some of these powerful Et Ada committed so much of themselves into the existence of reality that they become part of reality itself.
And right, this is what we were just referring to, where they kind of just become one with things and lose themselves in a lot of ways because they just become the thing that they are trying to help preserve.
Right, right. Now, the Aedra, as we know them, committed to imbuing their own power into reality in order to make Mundus happen and all of that, but they didn't commit so much that they disappeared. In fact, they are the planets in the sky. And they're still there, and they're still prayed to, and they're still worshipped and all of this, but they're also very quiet compared to, say, the Daedric princes, who are always
super
trying to
active.
Meddle. Super active, always trying to meddle in the things going on. It goes on, it says, some had to marry and make children just to last. This piece is very specifically Altmeri, very high elven. This idea that they join together and they create descendants, and then they join together and create descendants. This has to do with the whole, all of the, everything that came from something else, like biblically, so-and-so begot so-and-so, and so-and-so begot so-and-so. And in the Bible, people who descended had shorter and shorter lifespans. Same kind of concept. The things that descended from the other things were less powerful than the things they came from. And this is their way of justifying and explaining that. Each generation was weaker than the last, and soon there were Aldmer, that's the original name for the elves. Darkness caved in. Lorcan made armies out of the weakest souls and named them men. And they brought Sithis into every quarter. This is where you can see that this is absolutely written by somebody with an agenda.
Yeah, it's just like, so anyways, we made these really weak creatures and they're you.
Right. So the mannish creatures who we don't get along with were created by Lorcan because he's a trickster and he's a jerk. And by the way, they have a lot to do with Darkness and Sithis, who we don't like, because Sithis is the opposite of Anu. And so
he made all these lame people.
Right, right, right. This is why the world sucks, is because of those guys.
It's just like,
there.
You guys are no good. You're going to die too quick anyways. You just get in our way. It's just like immediately setting up that hierarchy you were talking about, where it's like, we are superior to you.
Right. And if you've played through Skyrim, you understand who the Thalmor are. This is their religious justification for wanting to cleanse the world of humanity, of wanting to bring back their ascent to godhood, because they feel like it was stolen from them and that mankind is a reflection of Lorcan, who is the one who actually did it, and is they're somehow in cahoots with him, which they might actually be, because there's reason to believe that Tiber Septim Talos was a mantling of Lorcan, basically became the new Lorcan because Lorcan was no longer around. There's a whole new section of stuff to go into there. Go listen to our Tiber Septim set of episodes on that wackiness if you're ready for that. But this goes on. Ariel pleaded with Anu to take them back. Take back this mankind.
Just
they suck.
Keep it.
But he had already filled their places with something else. That's weird, right? Anu is infinite and is beyond limitation, but yet because these things descended from Anu, he needed to fill himself with something else? Or is that the nature of infinity, is that no matter how much you take from it, it's always full, it's always infinite, so he can never take right. anything back?
Yeah, to have a limitation on that would undermine the word infinity, so it gets weird.
Yeah, so that's interesting, right? Already filled their places with something else. His soul was gentler, granting Ariel his bow and shield. So Ariel is now equipped with a bow and a shield so that he might save the Aldmer from the hordes of men. Ariel, in this setup, is the god of time, also known as Akatosh, who is supposed to be against mankind, according to Kyle.
Yeah, they're basically just painting all of the people who are not of Murish descent as these just like slobbering lunatics, just like here to ruin everything. And it's just like, yeah, we got to put a stop to this. They're just messing it all up. But it's just like, This is definitely like, you can see the propaganda side of this, where it's just like, yep, we need to have ourselves on a pedestal above our adversaries, even though there's not necessarily a lot of reason that they're adversaries right out the gate, other than the fact that they just like, well, no, this is not us. So
yeah,
no good.
Yeah. And if you study ancient cultures in our own world, you'll find out that among many ancient cultures, they were like a lot of modern people have this idea of like, oh, ancient cultures were pantheistic. They had many gods. They worshiped lots of different gods. Some of them did. But more often than not, each tribe had their own god. And they didn't deny the existence of other people's gods. They just only worshipped their god. And when they would go to war with each other, it was basically deciding whose god was more powerful. Basically, there were these arguments through ancient texts and the nature of their religious doctrine that said, our god is better than your god. Basically, my dad can beat up your dad.
Yes, I was about to make that joke. It's like, yo, my dad's way cooler than your dad, and he can totally beat you up. It's
right. This is the equivalent of that. The Myr, the elves, if you hear Myr and you're not familiar with that, that means elves. The original oldest Myr, the Aldmer, at least according to them, they're the oldest, were basically like, well, our dad is way stronger than your dad. Your dad's Lorcan. He's limited. Ours is unlimited. In fact, now ours has a cool bow and a shield.
Yeah, so now he's armed.
Yeah, he's going to hunt down your hordes of mankind. And it goes on. It says, some had already fallen, meaning some of these different groups, like the Khymer. Khymer, C-H-I-M-E-R. I think some people say Chimer, but I think it's Khymer.
Yeah, it's Khymer.
The Khymer were an offshoot of the Altmer group of elves that went and moved away. Basically, they went up to the area of what's now Morrowind, and they left that other group, and then they started worshiping Daedric princes. So, of course, they were no longer in the club.
High elves were like downgraded and ousted.
Yeah, and there's many other reasons. We'll go over that when we go over the Khymer again. But basically, they're not part of the group anymore because they listened. It says, who listened to Tainted at Ada? Those are Daedric princes. And others, like the Bosmer, had soiled time's line by making mannish wives. This is interesting, too. One of the things that many people talk about is that there are different groups of men and different groups of elves, but the ones that are most intermixed are the Bretons. Bretons are descended of man and elf and are traditionally still a mannish race, but the reason why they're good with magic is because they intermarried with elves at some point in history.
Right, or in less...
Or maybe not married.
Yeah, maybe less great ways. Right. We'll just leave it at that. There is, but they came to exist.
They came to exist, right? But in this document, it says the Bosmer were also tainted because they took mannish wives, Bosmer being the wood elves.
Hey, baseball fans, it's time to swing big on your bets this season. Step up to the plate with an odds boost token from BetMGM, an official sports betting partner of Major League Baseball. No opt-in is required. Just log into your BetMGM account to receive your odds boost token. Then, place a bet on any MLB game and activate your token. If your boosted bet hits, you'll score a bigger payout, no matter the showdown. BetMGM is your betting home for baseball. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21 21 plus only. This U.S. promotion offer not available in Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. For New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. For Arizona, call 1-800-NEXT-STEP. For Massachusetts, 1-800-327-5050. For Iowa, 1-800-BETS-OFF. For Puerto Rico, 1-800-981-0023. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards vary and expire in 1 to 7 days. In partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
Why choose a Sleep Number smart bed?
Can I make my side softer?
Can I make my side firmer?
Can we sleep cooler?
Sleep Number does that. Cools up to 8 times faster and lets you choose your ideal comfort on either side. Your Sleep Number setting. It's the Sleep Number Everything Smart Bed Sale. Every smart bed and base are on sale during our Memorial Day event. Up to 50% off, plus free home delivery. Limited time. Exclusively to Sleep Number store near you. Learn more at sleepnumber.com.
There's also other rumors about wood elves being more in line with the beast races, or,
right,
you know, because they have horns and things like that.
Right. They're a little more of the actual world, you know, because they're so one with the forest and nature and all of that there. And then, like you said, they've got some bestial qualities in certain scenarios. We don't need to go through all of that. They can even, you know, modify themselves when it gets into stuff like the ooze or the wild hunt, where it's just like they are sort of became their own thing independent that definitely ties into some uniqueness of the world itself.
Yeah. Yeah. So every race is weird in their own ways. And this is even more weird because this is not a thing. Them taking mannish wives is not a thing that's referenced most other places.
Yeah.
But again, it's in this foundational document. And it's why we're going back to the documents to see what they say.
And it would also, you know, be of more prominence in this situation, since they're viewing mannish races as an enemy, to note that when you're trying to demean other cultures or races, where it's like, well, another group might not even give it a second thought if that's the case. Where it's this, it's like, okay, well, this is their black mark. How could they do something like that?
Right, right. They've already defined mannish races as being the bad guys. And so now they're associating groups that have splintered off of them as being bad guys by going with bad Itada, bad powerful gods, or have mixed with man. But notice they don't bring up, like, the fact that they, you know, the wild hunt happens and then they eat their dead and, like, that kind of thing. Like, that doesn't come up at all because that's not the theme of this document.
Yeah, they don't really, as funny as it is, they don't really care about that. It's much more offensive that they would marry somebody who's mannish.
Right, because that's what this author is all on about here. But now it starts getting into some of these other locations, right? Everybody knows, because you play the games, in locations in Tamriel. That's the main continent that we're in. And there are different islands and places, but all of that is part of Tamriel. But there are different continents as well. And it says here, Ariel could not save out Altmora, not Atmora, Altmora, which is another, you'll often find in these documents that they have different spellings for certain words or completely different names altogether. Atmora, which is what most people will say, is the continent to the north that the Needs came from. The people who eventually became the Nords and then also intermingled with other races and those kinds of things. So it's like this frozen continent to the north, which is known as the Elder Wood. It says here, could not save Altmora, the Elder Wood, and it was lost to men. That implies that elves were up there at some point and they all got slaughtered by the people who lived in the north. Basically the, you know, the people who became Nords.
Right.
They were chased south and east to Old Elnofe. Old Elnofe is another phrase meaning the homeland of the elves, Aldemaris, which is another continent that is west and probably south of Tamriel.
And undefined because nobody can really
does it even
pinpointed
exist?
Pinpointed on the map.
Did
is
it used
it really
to exist
there?
And it's gone? There, right.
Yeah. It's sometimes it's thought that it's maybe more of a concept than a actual place.
Right. And there are a number of other places that are kind of like that. The place where the Red Guards came from, Yakuta. Like,
right.
There was some
is
sort
it really
of
underwater, or was it not there?
Was some kind of catastrophe, and so therefore people left. And there seems to be evidence that that may actually be true, and that maybe there are still some islands there. But we'll get into that when we get into their creation stuff. There's also another continent over to the east, but that doesn't come up in this document. Again, the world is more complex than it seems like there is, and you get these references to these different places. So they were chased south and east to Old Elnofe, so then they go live there, and Lorcan was close behind. This is implying that Lorcan was pushing the men forward towards war to like slaughter all the elves. He shattered that land into many. So that's the cataclysm, right? Finally, Trinimac, another Etada, Ariel's greatest knight, locked Lorcan down in front of his army and reached in with more than hands to take his heart. What do you think more than hands means?
Well, I will say, if it's written by Kirkbride, I don't want to put too much thought into it.
Yeah, one interpretation would be that it's not just a physical thing. He's like, he's physically removing his heart from his body because they're on Mundus. They have physical bodies at this point, but he's also doing a spiritual removal of the heart in a much deeper way. That's one interpretation.
Yep. I'm just saying, you know, when it involves Kirkbride, sometimes there's a lot of spears involved. So I don't know.
Yeah, different kinds of spears. But anyway, so basically he kills Trinimac, Ariel's greatest knight, under Ariel's direction, kills Lorcan, basically tears his heart out. Lorcan, he was undone. The men dragged Lorcan's body away and swore blood vengeance on the heirs of Ariel for all time. This again feels like propaganda. Like, the men will always hate us. Mankind's going to always hate us because we're elves.
Gotta keep them down because they always are going to be revenge. Right, like, that's all they care about.
Right, that's all they care about is killing us, so we always have to fight back. Then we get the final paragraph. But when Trinimac and Ariel tried to destroy the heart of Lorcan, it laughed at them. I love that the heart can laugh.
Yeah. Imagine it's got like googly eyes and a goofy mouth.
Yeah. This goes back to some Gnostic stuff. Some of the Gnostic Gospel of Thomas, the disciple of Christ, in that gospel, when they go to Jesus's tomb, the cross that Jesus was crucified on is leaning up against the tomb, like the door. And they notice the door is open and the women who show up start talking like, oh, he's gone. What happened? He's gone. And the cross talks and says, yay. Like, meaning yes, probably.
Yeah, right. Like,
yes, Jesus is gone. The tomb is empty. But like, the fact that an inanimate object can talk, this is what this reminds me of, right? This like,
and people are more concerned about like what it says than the fact that it's talking.
Right, it's freaking talking. Well, how is this happening? Well, in this case, I guess it's a god and he has a heart, so his
sure. And I mean, that, talk. You know, weird magic in this world is, you know, confirmable on the regular.
Right, but it not only laughs,
but still kind of funny.
Yeah, it said, "This heart is the heart of the world. The one was made to satisfy the other." So this is implying that Lorcan himself is tied to the existence of everything. He wasn't just the architect. There's something inherently about Lorcan that is tied to existence and limitation fundamentally. So Ariel fastened the thing to an arrow, remember he has a bow, and let it fly long into the sea where no aspect of the new world may ever find it. Which is also funny to read because the entire story of the Elder Scrolls Morrowind is about the groups of people and individuals who had found Lorcan's heart and used it to try to gain power.
Yep, pretty much.
And the fact that like the Red Mountain rose up out of the ocean because that's where the heart landed and all of that. But yet this document says it flew into the sea where no aspect of the new world might ever find it. Clearly, that's not true.
Until a couple days passed, and it totally made an entire volcanic island.
right. So that's the end of this document. And you can see some themes here. Like, not only does it establish that there are these powerful primordial beings of some sort, which is very common among many ancient myths, this idea of, like, this dichotomy between light and darkness, order and chaos, like these primordial things, and then those things come together and form other individuals who then have conflict with each other in different ways. And that leads to different groups of people who assign themselves with these different groups. And the tricky thing here is that this is all from the perspective of the High Elves. So this is their version of the story, which makes everyone else seem terrible. And they don't even mention beast races because they think they're lower than men.
Yeah, I was going to say they have them literally classified along with just like scribs and stuff like that. It's like, oh, no, they're totally sentient. Doesn't matter.
Yeah, doesn't matter. Yep. They might as well be animals. And yeah, that's this perspective. And who knows how far back in time this goes. And of course, this is translated and communicated over time. In fact, the monomyth as a whole is part of an attempt in order to explain all of these different myths and lore stuff to the Imperials, who by the third era of the world are in charge of basically Tamriel, although there's parts that they don't lord over. But this is kind of a, like, okay, let's look back on millennia of history, and this is what we seem to know and how we can formulate our understanding of it.
Right.
So there you go. Any other thoughts on this one, Lotus?
Yeah, no, I mean, I hope this was as clear as we could make it. It's kind of like complicated and ties into a lot of other things. That's the trickiest part about us doing these segmented episodes, which is really no other way to do that, is we have the topic we're discussing, but it ties into so many other shows that we've done discussing other topics, because everything is sort of just interwoven in this series. But this is a good, I think, background to the Altmiri belief, to how creation is, which, again, like you had mentioned, each culture has their own in the series, which is pretty cool. And they all have their own slants, but they also tie into each other. And some of them, you know, you can even see how they're influenced by each other as you play the games, or as you just read about the different things, because a lot of these things, you know, when one culture does one thing, it has an effect somewhere else, and their culture ends up defining themselves sometimes, like, why there's always this problem, so to speak, between the Mer and the Men in the series, where it's just like they're sort of at each other's throats most of the time because of this.
Right. And the Mannish races are not without their own faults when they portray the elves, you know, like the whole story about the Aeliads, who were another offshoot of the Altmer, who were mostly in Cyrodiil, and they had enslaved the Men, and then the Men fought back in the Alessian Rebellion, and that's why there's an empire and all of this,
right,
is a kind of a flip around of like, well, they were the aggressors, we're just defending ourselves.
Exactly.
So,
and
you have,
yeah, there's so much of this, and everybody's oppressing each other and stuff like that. It's a very the joke that, you know, back in the first game, where when the series was starting to get formed, it was the world of Tamriel is just so brutal, it was known as the Arena.
Yeah,
it's kind of funny because even though that's sort of been like, they don't call
it's a
Tamriel
kind of a
the Arena
point,
anymore,
right.
They definitely kept that vibe going throughout the entire series, even still.
Oh, yeah. It's a terrible place to live. Life in this world is awful. one of the other things you'll notice is if you've played through Skyrim, you've played through Oblivion, the remaster, even the original, you'll notice that in those Mannish places, there are the names of all of these divines, the Aedra, and almost none of that shows up in this document. It's all very different. And even somebody like Ariel shows up, but is not given the name Akatosh. That is a Mannish distinction.
Yep.
And this is something else you'll notice too, as we go to the different races, is that they have, like you talk about the Khajiit. The Khajiit have similar sounding names to some of the other names that are used, but they sound more like the way cats would say them, which is kind of cute.
Yeah, it's a unique Khajiit twist.
Right. But the further you get away from like the Mannish races, and the Bosmer have their own twist on this, the Nords have their own twist on it. But as you get further and further away, as you get to, say, the Yakudans, the Red Guard, or the Argonians, you end up with very different, like, the Argonians have the Hist, which is super weird. The Yakudan lore has all these weird names like Tuwaka and
Tall Papa,
and their whole, like, a lot of their lore plays into this idea that maybe there really are cycles of existence.
Yep.
That, you know, the snake eating its own tail.
Hear from Kalpas, we briefly mentioned at the start without going too deep into it. That's a big thing with the Yakudan lore and Red Guards.
Yeah, so one perspective is that there may just be a lot of hints in everybody's perspective, and none of them, of course, are 100% accurate. But if you take the sum of all the parts, maybe you can kind of piece something together that sort of represents
what
the
happened?
Real history.
Right.
So we'll continue on with more of these documents as we go through and kind of take a look at each one and break them apart. And the part that I hope you find even more interesting are the parts that, for those of you who really do know the lore, are still kind of surprising. This idea like Bosmer taking Mannish wives. Weird,
yeah.
Right? So there's going to be pieces of this that don't get discussed very much, but because we're going in so deep, we're actually going to be able to take a look at them and go, okay, why is that? Why would that be in here? Mm-hmm. So there you go. All right. That's the monomyth, the Eldmeri, the heart of the world. We're going to take a quick break. We will be right back because we've got patrons to thank. We've got, we don't have a new voicemail this week, but we definitely have a random page.
And sure do.
So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
This is Hamish Morak, Dragonborn, and you are educating yourself to the Elder Scrolls Lorecast.
All right. Thank you for sticking around after the break. If you'd like to help us out and keep the show going, head over to patreon.com/Elder Scrolls Lorecast. You can get all sorts of free stuff, ad-free episodes, which include video episodes. So if you're watching us on YouTube and you don't want ads, you can get them over there. You can get the shows a little bit early. They come out earlier in the night before the official release. You can also get t-shirts and stickers. You can join us on our patron chats, which is, we've got a patron chat coming up next week, I believe. Yeah, the 29th, which is the last Thursday of the month, and the patrons get to choose whatever they want to talk about. And we also have some new patrons to welcome: Sarah J, Steve T, Karen J, Waystation Crow, James M, Lewis E, Mothman, and Boudewivnigduin. I totally butchered that. I don't know how to pronounce that one.
Love that.
But thank you for your support.
also, how much do you think a crow would weigh at a waystation?
An unladen crow, or a cool. Anyway,
hit the random page.
We've got some Daedric Princes to shout out. They get shout outs every week. Blinding Vision, Hercene, Kirasi, Mothman, who's our newest one, and Peter R. Thank you so much for your continued support. Also, before we get to the random page, we did get a new review that came in. If you leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts in the US, we'll be able to read it out. If it's in another place, we can't see it, but it's still very helpful. Plus, you can leave reviews or comments on Spotify or wherever else you listen. So all of that stuff is very helpful. This one is from Jordan Quinzel. I think I'm pronouncing that correctly. Who writes, thank you, 5 stars. I've got to play Oblivion and Skyrim in the past, but have delved very deeply into ESO the last year and never really knew the lore. I love the way you guys explain the lore. It's fun and easy to understand, and love the comparisons to real world scenarios. Well, thank you so much.
Awesome. I'm glad to hear that, because that's our objective, at least. So I'm glad that at least it's resonating.
Yeah. Fill in the gaps, explain a little bit more about the way this works and maybe some of the meta perspective of how it was written and why it makes sense in the real world and all of that. So very cool. Thank you for leaving that. All right. Yeah. So get this, Lotus. I hit the random page. Are you ready for this one?
I really wanted to just be the monomyth. No,
it's the same. Oh, wow. It's the same exact page we are on. Monomyth, heart of the world, the Eldmeri. Cool. We'll just read that again. No, it's not that same page. But it is pretty cool because Oblivion just came out. We've been talking a lot about it.
Oh, no way. It's an Oblivion one?
It's an Oblivion one. And it's been updated with graphics from the remastered version, which is cool. It is the Prophet.
Oh.
The Prophet in Anvil, the Anvil Prophet, who begins the Knights of the Nine quest line and all DLC, all of that stuff.
Yeah. Speaking of our divines.
Yeah. Yeah. So he's here doing his whole like with his hands in the air thing. Like, and you can't miss him once you have that, once you included the DLC, but it's absolutely part of the remake. Like, you can't go to Anvil without them being like, have you seen the Prophet?
I know. Funny enough, when I was last playing and I went for that really flashbangy helmet that was out in the ocean and immediately was turned into gold because I can't wear it. When I went into Anvil to sell it, I was immediately accosted by this Prophet.
Yep. Yeah, you can't go there. I went back and I was like, oh yeah, that guy.
And then and the guards are offended by his existence.
I know. And I tried doing some other things, but everyone's like, go over there. Look at that guy. Did you see that guy over there? Go talk to him. And I was
really
like,
really loud.
Just let me do what I want. I just want to do other things in Anvil for a little bit. Can you guys chill out? But yeah, there's a whole document here about the Prophet added by the Knights of the Nine, first in Anvil during the quest of the pilgrimage, blah, 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 all of his dialogue and all that stuff, which we are not going to read. This would be an entire other episode. But There you go. The prophet from Oblivion is our page.
We're giving us giving you all an anecdote about him.
Yep. Yep. And he looks good. Like his little visual upgrade is nice. He's got like
The models kept just enough of the wackiness.
Yeah.
And I will say that the bestial races look chef's kiss.
I feel like you can make them into like little puppets, like little hand puppets. They feel like like they're made out of like real world fuzzy or like scaly textures.
Yeah. That feel like I was going to say they did such a good job with those characters specifically. And then the, you know, Marish and Manish ones are just janky enough that they're not potato faces anymore. They look real-ish.
But you can make them potato faces if you want.
Oh, you can make some horrific yes. creation. Truly, truly nightmare fuel. Yeah. But I do like that they kept just enough of the jank to maintain the charm.
Absolutely. Yeah. Very cool stuff. Lotus, what else do you have going on before we head out?
We had an episode of Tales where I got to gush about PAX East and my experience with the Oblivion remake, because we had talked about it on this show, and some more experiences with the Elder Scrolls Betrayal of the Second Era board game. So if that's stuff of interest to you in a more roundtable format, there's the other show that I do, which is Tales of Tamriel, presented by the UESP. And actually, with the long weekend, we'll most likely be throwing out another episode this weekend, because if I get any game time, I did play a little Turok, because that's a
you love Turok.
I love that series so much. I wish it would come back. Well, it is coming back. Whatever. This isn't a Turok show. but other than that, I have just been having so much fun with the Elder Scrolls IV Oblivion remaster. I didn't realize how much I wanted to play that game again until I was playing that game again.
Yeah, yeah. I'm at the point now where I'm starting to mod it. I'm like, and the Vortex mod manager works with it now, and
yes, a lot of the mods. I've heard that they've been doing a lot of stuff, but people have been having all sorts of fun with doing mods and stuff. So
yeah, so now my arrows fly faster, which is nice. I felt like the arrows they fly slower.
I arc them like I'm shooting a basketball to try to hit people in the head. That's right for the long range shots. Like, yeah, for sure.
I just go faster, and that's nice. And then I got like I made the lights brighter, like on lamps and things.
Okay,
they don't disappear in the distance as like they stay up longer.
The draw distance in the remaster is mind-boggling, by the way.
It's great. It's just like little details, like say like a lantern on the road will disappear after a certain distance.
I just mean in general, yeah. I'm shocked by the draw distance. Like it's wild how far you can actually see, and it's like, oh wow.
Yeah, it's cool. Like, and if you have a high resolution monitor, like I upgraded my monitor in the last year, and like you can still see creatures in the distance that are only just a few pixels big on the monitor, but they're still moving around.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, is that a deer or is that a Daedra? Right. What is that?
Is a troll coming at me?
Right. I've been messing with that. I also jumped into Doom the Dark Ages, which pretty freaking good. I was really into 2016. Eternal didn't hit me as well. It's a little too twitchy and having to constantly swap your guns all the time.
It was a little more a game of shooter chess. I found
Which I get why people was would intentional like that. Right. Oh, absolutely. It just wasn't my thing as much.
I liked that portion of it. I wasn't as big of a fan of the platforming stuff.
I felt a little
arcadey for Doom.
Right. Yeah. I wasn't as into that in the whole twitchies keep changing your weapon.
I mean, I liked Eternal quite a bit, but I definitely preferred 2016 personally.
I didn't finish Eternal.
Oh, really? Oh, no. I
finished 2016.
I have 100% achievements in that.
That's your thing.
Yeah. It was also a very lengthy game.
It's true. But usually I finish those games. Like, it's usually one of my, like, okay, I make my way all the way through at least once, you know? But Doom Dark Age is like, you feel like a freaking tank. You also are fast at the same time. All of the weapons feel like they just, like, the fact that you just melt the little guys around you so easily feels awesome. The setting is really cool. I don't know, the story stuff, whatever, but it's cool that it's there.
Sure.
And people have complained. They're like, well, it's not Mick Gordon in the music anymore, and it's not as good. But, you know, I tried to give it a real chance. I loaded up the OST, skipped through the tracks, not just in the game, and there are some bangers. There's some banger tracks in there. It's not exactly the same, but it
can be
good.
Tricky when it comes to that stuff, because like there's a lot of times where you can have something you love. I mean, The Elder Scrolls is a perfect example of this. There have been three major composers that are like well known, and the one that had been most well known for a while is gone,
right?
And now it's kind of like, okay, well, we've got Brad Derrick, who does fantastic work in ESO, and has been included in some of the other stuff. And then there's Enon Zur, who has been really involved with Fallout and Starfield, but then he did the Blades soundtrack, which was the mobile game. Spoilers, if you haven't heard that soundtrack rules if you like Elder Scrolls music. It sounds like it's just a mainstream release, and it's just a, you know, quote unquote, just a mobile game or whatever. So it's
I think when it comes to art forms and especially music, if you hit someone with music while they are a teenager, they will, and they love it at that point in their lives, it will create this foundational thing where nothing will ever be as good, because they are prone to an emotional response to the world around them, and it like docks itself in their brain. And that doesn't mean that there aren't artists after that are equally as good or better in some.
Sure. And sometimes it's just a different flavor of something, which is okay that you do or don't like it more. But it's just like, it's just different. And my big thing is, I don't mind whether something's different or not. It's just, does it capture the feel that I'm looking for?
Right.
So I'll be curious to hear it, 'cause I actually haven't heard any of this stuff, and I love Brad Derrick's stuff. Not Brad Derrick, McGordon's, sorry, yeah. McGordon's stuff from the original Dooms. Not the original, you know what I mean.
The
original remakes.
The 2016. Yeah, 2016 and internal. So anyway, cool stuff. I've been getting into that stuff, but still playing Oblivion. And every day there's new mods out. This game is going to be highly modded, just like Skyrim. And it's going to transform over time. So that's fun as well. That's what I've been doing. You've got the rest of my shows on robotsradio.net. There's Fallout Lorecast and the Lord of the Rings Lorecast if you want to get into that. But there's lots of other shows if you're into video games and you want lore, go check out robotsradio.net. There's all sorts of different things. You'll find something else that you like. And that's it for this episode. It's been me and Lotus. We'll be getting more into some of these other documents that deal with the other races and their perspectives in future episodes. But next week, we've got our patron chat, so come back and join us for that. And until then, stay safe out there. And, you know, if elves come after you because you are one of the mannish races and, you know, want to kill you, then at least you know that it's your fault because.
Yeah, exactly. You
know, Lorcan.
Because permanent blood feuds.
Permanent, because, you know, that's just the way nature is, and cool, right? All right. Yeah. We'll see you next time. Bye, everybody.
See you later.
Thanks for tuning in to the Elder Scrolls Lorecast. Check out robotsradio.net for more podcasts just like this, and join us on the Robots Radio Discord. Be part of a community of over 5,000 people who are excited about video games and so much more. Robots Radio. Games. Lore. Stories. Community. Just press play.
Hey, baseball fans, it's time to swing big on your bets this season. Step up to the plate with an odds boost token from BetMGM, an official sports betting partner of Major League Baseball. No opt-in is required. Just log into your BetMGM account to receive your odds boost token. Then, place a bet on any MLB game and activate your token. If your boosted bet hits, you'll score a bigger payout, no matter the showdown. BetMGM is your betting home for baseball. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21 plus only. This U.S. promotion offer not available in Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. For New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. For Arizona, call 1-800-NEXT-STEP. For Massachusetts, 1-800-327-5050. For Iowa, 1-800-BETS-OFF. For Puerto Rico, 1-800-981-0023. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards vary and expire in 1 to 7 days. In partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
Why choose a Sleep Number smart bed?
Can I make my side softer?
Can I make my side firmer?
Can we sleep cooler?
Sleep Number does that. Cools up to 8 times faster and lets you choose your ideal comfort on either side. Your Sleep Number setting. It's the Sleep Number Everything Smart Bed Sale. Every smart bed and base are on sale during our Memorial Day event. Up to 50% off, plus free home delivery. Limited time. Exclusively to Sleep Number store near you.
Learn more at sleepnumber.com.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.